Joining us now to analyze today's headlines is Christina Mislan. She's an assistant professor of journalism studies at the Missouri School of Journalism. Hi, Christina.
Hello, Sonali.
Pope Francis kicks off a highly anticipated visit to the United States this week. It will be the 78-year-old's first ever visit to the U.S. CNN, which described the Pope as bringing tough love to the U.S., described the setting for his visit in this way. Francis is stepping into an intense domestic debate on issues close to his heart, including income inequality, climate change, abortion, the definition of marriage, religious freedom, and immigration, end of quote. Coinciding with his visit is a strike by low-wage federal workers led by the group Good Jobs Nation. Workers who cook and clean for lawmakers and their staffs in Washington, D.C. have been demanding living wages since their work was turned over to private companies. Presidential candidate Bernie Sanders plans to join their rally in D.C. today. Pope Francis just left Cuba before coming to the U.S., and while there, he met Fidel Castro, and he called for a, quote, revolution of tenderness. The Pope had played a critical role in the resumption of U.S.-Cuba relations. Well, Christina, the Pope is so popular that he's being treated like royalty. Is that because of, rather than in spite of, his progressive-leaning positions on several issues?
I think some of it. So, apparently recent polls have indicated that not only people who identify as Catholics, but non-Catholics as well, are really excited about Pope's visit, and that includes a lot of progressives because of his stance on climate change and economic inequality, the current anti-immigration rhetoric, and, you know, the fact that he represents a South American identity helps, especially with the immigration issue. But, you know, I also think we need to remember his stance on women's reproductive rights. And so here's where I think maybe some progressives can take this opportunity to challenge him. The ability to be able to decide when to parent, right, that's including access to birth control and the choice to have an abortion if desired and needed, that's directly related to access to education, higher income, et cetera. So the issues, the progressive agenda that he's very much pushing forth is directly is actually related to women's ability to actually have access so that we can address issues of economic inequality, for instance. Mm-hmm. And so I think maybe this is a really good moment to push him on that.
Right. And by the way, on tomorrow's episode of Uprising, we'll hear from a march of immigrant women heading to D.C. to coincide with the Pope's visit in order to draw attention to the cruelty of immigrant family detention. If KPFK's general manager decides to let you hear that show, that is. If you tune in and hear something other than Uprising with Sonali, just go to our website, uprisingwithsonali.com, to hear the band broadcast. Martin Shkreli, the 32-year-old CEO of a pharmaceutical company named Turing, has come under fire from social media users who denounced his company's decision to buy a drug named Daraprim and then raise its price by more than 5,000%. Daraprim is used to treat toxoplasmosis and is mostly prescribed to people with weakened immune systems, such as those with HIV and cancer. Before Turing's acquisition, the pill cost $7.50 each. Now Shkreli, a former hedge fund manager, has decided to charge $750 a pill and has justified the price jump, saying it will pay for research and development on toxoplasmosis. But doctors have responded saying there's no real demand for research into a disease that only impacts about 4,000 people a year and for whom the pill is now out of reach. Senator Bernie Sanders and Representative Elijah Cummings yesterday wrote a letter to Turing Pharmaceuticals saying they would be conducting an investigation into the price increase. Well, Christina, price gouging by pharmaceuticals has actually started to become a campaign issue. Is it an apt symbol of capitalist exploitation?
Well, it's definitely an example of what's wrong with the medical system, where pharmaceutical companies can have so much influence on the healthcare system. And so in this instance, you know, one of the rationales for this dramatic and sharp increase is the need for more research, as you mentioned. Well, maybe we should also ask how pharmaceutical companies are funding this research. So there are numerous criticism and accusations of companies using shortcuts where people are pressured, researchers are pressured for giving favorable results, testing on people without their proper approval, using drugs for unapproved uses. I mean, that's just a few. Some researchers are paid by pharmaceutical companies that market the drugs under study. And so it's not only a question of capitalist exploitation, that's a huge part of it, but we also have to look at how the healthcare system is directly impacted. It raises questions about who actually has access to care.
Right. And finally, the state of Louisiana plans to retry the last remaining member of the so-called Angola 3. Albert Woodfox, who has been held in solitary confinement for more than 40 years, will be tried for a third time for the murder of a prison guard that took place in 1972. Woodfox and two other men, Robert King and Herman Wallace, were convicted of the murder and held in Angola prison in Louisiana for decades. King and Wallace were eventually separately released and shortly after Wallace passed away. Human rights groups have appealed to the legal system for decades, maintaining that the trials were deeply flawed. Now, because a Louisiana judge refused to dismiss the case, the last remaining imprisoned of the three men, Albert Woodfox, will be tried yet again, even though most of the witnesses in the case have died. A U.S. district court had already ordered Woodfox's unconditional release by Louisiana, but Louisiana has continued to aggressively prosecute. Only intervention by a federal judge can now stop the case from commencing. Well, Christina, this case seems like such a travesty of justice, the entire case impacting all three men. Even the New York Times editorial board recommended that Albert Woodfox be released last year. What does this case represent to you?
Well, I think there are several issues, and this one case can point to the various issues that we face with this prison industrial complex, right? So you have the punishment of political activists, so the ongoing jailing of political prisoners, and apparently that's definitely part of the situation, as people have suggested that he and the other two were involved in hunger strikes in the 1970s, I believe. Then also the issue of mass incarceration, the various issues of that, the fact that there are millions of people who cannot participate in daily civic life because of their status as second-class citizens, the fact that people have been robbed of their lives when new DNA tests are continuously proving the innocence of some prisoners, that includes people on death row, the human rights abuses like solitary confinement, which is apparent in this case, that occur in prisons. And then so altogether, what you have, it represents a failed system that is hardly just. It plays a role of a neo-slave institution, as people like Michelle Alexander have pointed out, of course.
Christina, thank you as always for your analysis. We'll talk to you again next time.
Thank you.
Christina Mislan is an assistant professor of journalism studies at the Missouri School of Journalism. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.